To begin today's program, Michigan Governor Rick Snyder updated his agenda last night in the annual State of the State speech. The centerpiece was the creation of what the governor called a river of opportunity that would improve state services, especially those coming from Michigan's Departments of Community Health and Human Services. Mr. Snyder plans to combine the two into one. He says their work represents a failed model that is too focused on programs than on people. Among other comments, the governor called for voters to support the proposed hike in the state sales tax this May and the establishment of a commission on third-grade reading standards. To respond to the governor's State of the State, we welcome three guests. First, Democratic Senator Jim Ananick of Flint, the Senate's new minority leader. Welcome to Studio S, Jim.
Thank you for having me.
We welcome back Republican Senator Rick Jones of Grand Ledge, the Senate's new majority caucus chair. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
And it's a pleasure to welcome for the first time to current state Phil Power, founder and chairman of the Center for Michigan, which describes itself as a nonpartisan think and do tank. It operates Bridge Magazine at bridgemi.com. Phil Power, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me. Delighted to be here.
The governor made official last night his desire to combine the Departments of Human Services and the Department of Community Health. He says this is part of a larger effort to make these agencies more people-centric and less program-centric. Senator Ananick, some of your fellow Democrats are wary of the move, fearing that services may actually deteriorate, basically that the devil's in the details. Are you one of those?
Well, you know, I think there's we got to be careful not to have a knee-jerk reaction. I think the concept makes some sense, and I think the legislature and I think my colleagues in the Senate, we should have some oversight to make sure that as this process goes forward, that it's done the right way. But that's a concern, I think, that we have. And but I also think that, you know, the concept does make some sense. And if we do it right, it could actually provide better quality services to help people go from dependency to self-sufficiency, which is what the goal should be for everybody.
Senator Rick Jones, how much room for improvement is there here by merging these two departments?
Well, I think it makes sense. We're paying for the sins of the past. We have Michigan business tax coming into the budget now, and surprise, we're $300 million short. So we have to look for ways to streamline everything. And I think it's great to put two departments together. What do you cut? Management at the top. Keep as many workers out there as you can, and you cut the top. That's what I did back when I was sheriff years ago.
In Eaton County. Phil Power, your question.
Well, let's continue on the idea of creating this new department and restructuring government. Some people say that if you don't have anything to propose in your State of the State speech, what you do is you call for a reorganization and restructuring of government. Other people say that we have, I think the number 145 has been thrown around, different federal and state programs flopping around in Michigan, and we are slicing and dicing ordinary people within the chimneys defined by these various programs. I'm interested in both Rick and Jim. What you think about those two differing approaches to this restructuring idea?
Jim Ananick.
Well, I think probably both have some truth to it. I mean, I think, you know, I'm going in to this idea with the idea of I'd like to find a way to say yes. I think it makes sense. On the surface, some of the things that my colleague Rick said make a lot of sense. If we can provide better services to people in a more streamlined approach that helps them get from where they're at to where they want to be, I think that's the goal, and I think we can do it. You know, obviously, as we go forward, we need to be a part of it. As I said before, I think there should be some oversight to make sure that it's done right. I agree with Rick that you can consolidate some management and make sure that the people that are on the ground helping people are able to do their job and provide the services. You know, 145 programs, I'd have to see what those are before I specifically criticize individual programs. But, you know, I think there's a number of ways to make sure that we get services in the hands of people that they need so they can go from where they want to be, as I said before, to where they, from where they're at to where they want to be.
Senator Jones, anything to add to that?
Well, I believe there are too many programs. You have so many that people probably don't know where to go to get help. And if we can streamline that and get the river of opportunity for everybody, I think that's what the governor wants. I think that's a good point.
Senator Rick Jones, Senator Jim Ananick, our special guest here today on Current State on WKAR. We're also joined by Phil Power of the Center for Michigan and Bridge Magazine, who is on the phone. The governor recommended a yes vote on the sales tax hike in May. Let's listen back to that.
Vote yes, so we can get rid of those crumbling bridges and crumbling roads. Vote yes, so we can have stronger schools and local government. Vote yes, so we can have tax relief for lower-income people.
Rick Jones, do you agree the sales tax proposal should be passed?
Absolutely. I voted for it to go on the ballot. I think we need to fix our roads and bridges. They are crumbling. And in my district, everywhere I go, people say they prefer one-penny sales tax to higher gas taxes.
Should the governor have hit that harder in the address last night?
Well, I think the governor gave a very dynamic speech for a man in great pain with a torn Achilles who was on a device where one knee had to be bent back just so he could give his speech. And I think, you know, in hindsight, it would have been great for him to hold up a piece of concrete that had fallen off a bridge and had a little scenic value there. But the man delivered a very good speech for a man in pain.
Somebody quipped that he's the first lame duck governor who was actually lame, but which was kind of the quip of the day. I don't know who to attribute that to, but Jim Ananick, why don't you weigh in on this? Will you be voting for the sales tax proposal, and what did you make of the governor's comments about it?
Well, yeah, I'll definitely be voting for it, and I plan on advocating for it as well. I mean, I thought the governor did a good job. I do think it's on him to lead this coalition that's going to be built for the May election, but I look forward to working with colleagues like Rick and others to make sure that we pass this, because I think this is a good compromise that will help us address a lot of issues.
Phil Power, your question?
Well, let's follow up on this road sales tax thing. One thing that is pretty clear is that until the vote in May, the legislature is going to get stuck in argumentative paralysis about what to do about state tax policy and roads and transportation and a whole bunch of other stuff. There are some critics of the proposal who say that this was kind of a Christmas tree and aid to schools was thrown in to get support of the teachers' lobby and the MEA, and that fixing the unearned income tax credit is a way to appeal to the Democrats. And at the same time, there are lots of people who say, gee, how do you assemble this kind of unusual coalition to support something as significant as one that will yield $1.2 billion a year to fix the roads that everybody agrees are rotten? So I guess the question that I would have for both of our distinguished guests is what do you think the odds are?
Rick Jones?
Well, in my opinion, it's 50-50 because there are a lot of negative people out there. But I can tell you that every coffee shop I go to, it's about 99% positive.
Jim?
I agree with Rick. You know, I think it's about a 50-50 shot. And I think as we talk to people about what the details are, you know, I think we'll be able to sell people on the idea that this is good for a lot of people. You know, this was a compromise, really. I mean, it was people looking at trying to help schools, trying to help local police and fire, trying to provide some tax relief, you know. I think what we did in late December was come together and show that we can work together, where, you know, Washington has failed to do that over the last few years. We've come together on some pretty big issues, and that's the way it's supposed to be done.
Are as many of your constituents behind the sales tax proposal as Senator Jones just suggested are in his?
I don't know exactly, but the people I've been talking to, I find a lot of people, once I explain it to them and explain the details, that they understand why we voted for it, and I think they're going to support it.
Rick Jones, the governor, says Michigan's 70% third grade reading proficiency number. 70% of Michigan third graders are apparently at a proficient level in terms of reading. He says that number has to go higher. He called for the creation of a commission to study that, and presumably that commission will end up making recommendations. Is the third grade reading plan that was being debated last year still on the table?
Well, I don't support what was last year. Last year, it was just every child that doesn't meet this, we're just going to hold them back. We're going to cause mass chaos in the schools.
Critics call that read or fail.
Yeah, I don't support that concept. I think we don't have bad teachers. What we have are social problems, and we need to get out there with early childhood education and make sure 95% read by third grade.
Jimmy Ananick.
Say exactly what I would have said.
Okay.
So I don't need to reiterate.
You two,
he did a great
you two
job.
Are not disagreeing enough.
Sorry, I can make something up if you want, but he did a good job. It's what I would have said.
he also called for raising the academic standards of all Michigan schools, conventional public schools, and charters. Here's an excerpt from that.
Whether it be a public school, a charter school, the EAA, and we need a common bar that's a high bar, that's an increasing bar to make sure these kids get the best education possible.
Rick Jones, any particular response to that?
Charter schools absolutely must be held to the same standard as all public schools.
Jim Ananick?
Yeah, I agree. I think accountability in the schools is a good thing, and I think it should be across the board, whether it be for academics or financial issues. It's something we've been working on. There's sort of some gray area in the law about when a school closes, how quickly that money gets back into the school aid fund and follows the kid. I think accountability across the board makes sense in all things education.
Phil Power, your question.
Let me go back to third grade reading for just a moment. Let's say that kids don't wind up proficient in reading in the third grade. What are you going to do? You're going to hold them back, as a lot of people are claiming. You're going to give them extra help. What's the best solution? We understand how important third grade reading is, but as a practical matter, what do you do about the kids who ain't making it?
Well, I think Rick did a good job of articulating that earlier. I think pre-K, early intervention in kindergarten, first, second, and third grade, I think we should focus on making sure they're successful in the first place and not talking about them failing. I think taking a success approach is the best way. I used to be a teacher. I didn't teach kids that young. But, for me, if we get there early, we can make sure they're successful as opposed to thinking about if they fail. And we'll have that number that Rick said in the 95, hopefully, obviously someday 100%, which is almost impossible. But the best we can, 95, 96, 97, 98, that's a huge success. And I also think one thing that was missed as a former teacher, as I said before, ninth grade math is extremely important. A lot of kids struggle with algebra, and there's so much practical application. We need to make sure we focus on that as well. That's just, one former teacher's point of view, though.
Senator Jones, do you feel that charter schools in Michigan have a lot further to go to reach the bar that the governor is alluding to here? I mean, there was a scathing series out in the Detroit Free Press last year regarding standards in Michigan's charter schools, suggesting that they have an awful long way to go in terms of transparency, accountability, educational standards. How do you feel about that?
Well, absolutely. Charter school is paid for by public tax dollars. It's not a private school. So they need to be held to exactly the same standards in every place, whether it be transparency or the standards. But in addition, I'd like to say what the governor said last night is, let's put more caseworkers in the schools. Let's make sure that kid that comes and he's not clothed properly or he hasn't been fed, let's find out what's going on. Let's help those families and get them on that river of opportunity.
Something the governor didn't...
Mark, could I just break in here
certainly
for just a moment and mention something that we've learned in our reporting at Bridge Magazine? We sent reporters to Massachusetts, Tennessee, Minnesota, and Florida, four states that have improved enormously the performance and learning of kids in schools. And one of the things that we found in all states is that those children in third grade who were not proficient in reading, instead of holding them back or penalizing them, they devoted special effort. They doubled down on those kids, provided special teaching, special resources, special things, and they've succeeded in improving the third grade reading proficiency by this device. And it suggests to me, at least from what our reporting has found, that this is probably a pretty good way to go rather than penalize those kids. And I'm delighted to hear both of you saying sensible things about that.
Are you both confident that kind of device will end up in any legislation that is likely to be passed?
Well, I think...
That kind of remediation that is referring to.
I think it's important. And I think, specifics, I think, could be left up to the local community, but I think there are some out there that work, no question about it. And early intervention or specific remediation for that third grader, I think it's what helps them succeed, and I think that's what we should be doing. And Rick just made a great point about the caseworker. When I was teaching in Flint, I had a student, unfortunately, she was really sort of a top-notch quality student, but she was squatting in a home by herself, didn't have parents at home, you know, found a way to come to school early, take a shower, and still, you know, be on the dean's list. Now, not every kid can do that. That's pretty remarkable. But we shouldn't allow kids to have to be in a situation like that. They shouldn't have to find ways to try to do homework with candlelight or with the flashlight because she doesn't have power. Now, that's not acceptable. And I think what Rick is talking about is something I completely agree with, is helping make sure that the kids come to school and they have what they need. I think the governor made a good point about that, and I see a lot of common ground there.
Senators Jim Ananick and Rick Jones, our special guests, along with Phil Power of the Center for Michigan and Bridge Magazine, joining me today on WKAR's Current State. Something the governor didn't touch on, as I recall, was prevailing wage. Senator Rick Jones, how do you feel the prevailing wage issue is going to unfold here? Republicans put that on the table first in both chambers.
Well, it appears to me that this is going to be one of the things that Arlen Meekhoff, the leader of the Senate, wants to push. I presume it will pass, and I presume the governor will probably veto it because he seems to have a different viewpoint.
Where are you on it?
I'm leaning towards supporting getting rid of the prevailing wage. I've seen some figures that are startling, that $250 million more per year it costs the taxpayers to build new school buildings. And then you have the roads, and then you have government buildings. And I'm very worried that there's a huge amount of waste out there by not allowing true competition.
Jim Ananick?
You know, myself and my caucus will never support lowering middle-class wages, and that's really what this proposal is about. It's an area where Arlen and I, and I think a lot of my colleagues on both sides, on the Republican side, we're just not going to agree on that one. And we'll have a rigorous debate, and, you know, I think we'll come down on opposite sides. But
what about all those dollars those middle-class families save by not funding more expensive schools?
Well, prevailing wage, you know, basically is there to help the local community keep those jobs and that money local. We've seen stories, example in Flushing, where they hired a sort of, you know, shyster contractor that came in and said they could be low, got the job about halfway done, the company went out of business, and then a company had to come in and fix it and cost a lot more money. And you see stories about like that happen all across the state. I think, you know, prevailing wage basically makes sure that local companies with local people are doing the work, and it's high quality. I think it's a successful program. You know, obviously we may not agree, but, you know, we'll hopefully we can. I'd like to see us kill it, but we'll see.
Phil Power, I'll let you have the last question, but it's got to be quick. We're down to less than a minute, so try to hit them with a question they can answer quickly.
Let's characterize the whole speech. Was it centrist? Was it slicing and dicing the middle? How do you think the Republicans are going to look at it? How do you think the Democrats are going to look at it? What does it say about the governor's political strategy of seeing if he can carve out a sensible place in the middle?
Rick Jones, what do you think?
I would say the speech was populist. And I think both Republican and Democrat saw a lot of good in it.
I agree. I think it was success centered. It was about trying to find success and not partisan. I think it's, you know, as Rick said, very populist. And I think we can pull out things that we agree on, and there'll be some areas maybe we don't. But I think I'm hopeful that if as we go forward, we'll be able to find a lot of common ground.
We want to thank our guest here today. Democratic Senator Jim Ananick of Flint is the Senate's new minority leader. Republican Senator Rick Jones of Grand Ledge, the Senate's new majority caucus chair. And Phil Power, thank you. Phil is founder and chairman of the Center for Michigan. Thanks, one and all.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.